Welcome to You've Gotta Taste This, the podcast where food people tell you about recipes that you've simply got to taste. I'm your host, Adam Roberts, and I've been writing about food for almost 20 years. I love to cook, and even more, I love to talk about cooking. So let's get started. My guest today is Karan Soni, an actor who you might know from the movies Deadpool, Safety Not Guaranteed, and the TV show Miracle Workers. Here's the message he sent me.
Hey Adam, it's Karan Soni, and you've got to taste this Keema Pow. Good luck.
Keema Pow? What's Keema Pow? Well, you're about to find out on this week's episode of You've Got to Taste This. And if you'd like the recipe for this Keema Pow, be sure to check out my blog, The Amateur Gourmet, at amateurgourmet.com. All right, here's my talk with Karan Soni. All right, Karan, thank you so much for doing You've Got to Taste This. I am so excited to talk to you about Keema Pow. Is that how you say it?
That's right, yeah.
So, okay, so you came over for a dinner party. We should tell the full story.
I know. Well, we should just say that, first of all, I'll just give my perspective, which is that we met in 2021. Is that correct? Uh-huh.
Yes, I think that's right.
Back then you were like, you got to do my podcast. And then back then you were like, you got to have dinner at my place. And now we've done both.
In only two years. Yeah. I think, you know, I'm a little slow at like making these things happen, but once they happen really fast. Yeah. But you were in my kitchen looking at my cookbooks and you got very excited because I had the Dishoom cookbook.
Yes.
And tell us about Dishoom and like your relationship to it.
Well, so I had never been, but I'd always heard of it. And then during COVID, I feel like that was a big cookbook. I think it came out in 2020. That's when at least I got it. And then I live very close to, like you, India Sweets and Spices, the Indian grocery store. But I never shop there. I just go to the one that's closer to me, Lassen's. And then once I got that book, I was like, this is an excuse to go because peak COVID, everyone was going to Lassen's and Albertsons and they were very crowded and no one was going to the Indian grocery store.
Interesting. Yeah. Okay.
So I sort of, it was my little like early COVID, like I'm going to just make stuff from this book experience. And then I got to actually go to the restaurant in person in, I think 2021. It's all a blur. Yes.
And it's in London, right? It's a London based restaurant.
Yes. It's in London and Scotland, I believe.
Oh, cool.
Yes. And there's like five or six of them now. I went to the one in Covent Garden and Kensington. Both were excellent.
And the concept is that it's like Bombay style food. Is that
Yeah. So it's basically like in Bombay, there's something called Parsi cafes, which is just these sort of cafes that have like a mixture of like street food, but also like popular Indian dishes. Mm-hmm. So it's not like a full regular Indian restaurant menu. And also a lot of them serve lunch. And that's the big thing with like big Indian restaurants is like they're more dinner places because it's so heavy, the food. But the Parsi cafes are sort of like you can just set up all day and just hang out there. And it's a very like Bombay sort of thing because there's a big Parsi community there. So they sort of have that vibe. And actually both times I think when I went, I ended up going for lunch in the London one because it was so busy.
Do you remember what you had when you went?
Yes, I think I had a Kati roll the first time. I don't know if that's in the book.
Okay.
Which is basically like an Indian version of a burrito.
Yeah, that sounds
with, like,
good. Okay.
And then the second time I went for dinner, I had like the full spread. Like I had like a few curries, I had some dal, I had the full like Indian meal with my family. But yeah, it was very good.
Well, I have so many questions to ask you, but I think I'm going to like lead with this specific recipe. So when I reached out to you and I was like, you know, send me a recipe you're passionate about, I guess you remembered that I had this cookbook and you sent me, actually you sent me the wrong recipe.
Oh no, I did.
Yeah, well, because you were like,
make keema.
What does keema mean? Do you know?
Keema means like a lamb, like minced lamb.
So maybe you didn't send me keema, but you sent me something that I was all, it was like ground chicken.
Maybe keema then means ground. I know it means mince, but I thought it meant minced lamb, but I could be wrong.
Oh, I love how authoritative you were at the beginning. You were like, it means lamb. And now you're like, I don't even know what it means. But anyway, just as I was about to go shopping, I was like, okay, I'm shopping for the keema, whatever. And you were like, no, that's not the recipe. It was autocorrect. So you saved the day. But the recipe, I described it once I made it and tasted it, which I loved.
How did it go?
It was so good. I mean, The hilarious thing that happened last night is I made all this Indian food. I made dirty chai cookies, which were really fun.
Oh,
that had like espresso in them. And I made
so good.
The cheese toast from this book that you recommended, you I made, which was fantastic.
That's like my childhood snack.
Delicious. And I made this cookbook author named Meera Soda. Do you know her work?
No.
She has a great book called Fresh India, which I love. Oh. And she has a recipe for like cauliflower curry with like cashews and peas. So I made that. Anyway, just as everyone got here and I was about to serve this incredible luscious feast, the power went out.
What?
All our electricity went out. So oh we had a light candle.
That doesn't really happen. Well,
no,
it just
didn't I know.
Happen. We just had rain in LA and it happened a lot, but people thought it was over. Wait, how long was it out for?
For like an hour. So I wasn't sure whether to serve the quima yet or if I should wait. So I actually waited until the electricity came back on. So this is all a big build up to say that it was absolutely delicious. And I described it when I served it as almost like an Indian sloppy Joe. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Because it's like loose meat in a way.
Yeah, exactly. And it's like, it's the one I picked because there's like a basic, as you'll cook hopefully more of the Dishoom books, there's something that a lot of Indian curries require that is technically not a curry, the keema, so it didn't require, which I think makes it easier to make.
Okay.
But there's something called in the book an onion tomato masala, which is basically like the base to make any curry, and it can take like 25 to 30 minutes just to make that. And it's one of those things where you have to brown the onions and it gets right to them burning. And I think the first few times you make it does burn because you don't want to stop it.
Yeah.
And I was just like, I hope, but it's like the base for like any basically curry. And I was like, well, how can we make you not do that first time?
Oh, I'm glad you saved me. Yeah.
Yeah. And do something that's actually very approachable and doable, but tastes very good, I think.
Do you know what step was the most shocking and the one I was most afraid of?
What?
Adding yogurt to a hot pan with oil and like garlic and ginger and onions and raising the heat and letting it separate. I was like, what? Because that just sounded so strange to me that you would want like your dairy to separate. But I have to say like I feel like I'm skipping all over the place, but just to walk people through essentially what this is like you grate garlic and ginger and then you saute onions and olive and vegetable oil. You add the garlic and ginger, then you add spices, you add coriander seeds, right? And and then you add the yogurt. Then you let that separate. Then you stir in ground up lamb and then you stir in like a herb paste made with coriander leaves and mint leaves and green chilies. And you let that all cook together and you add flour and bay leaves and peas. And I have to say like my first bite of it was truly stunning. Like it was one of those moments. It doesn't happen very often like in my kitchen where I taste something that I truly have never tasted that combination before.
Yeah.
But that combination of the yogurt, which was sour and sort of like tart, and then the herbaceousness of the cilantro and the mint, and then the like fattiness and gaminess of the lamb, like was like a power punch of flavor. So thank you for turning me on to this.
God. What did you serve it? Did you serve it with any bread or anything? Or
I did. I followed your advice and I bought paratha, frozen paratha. And those are a revelation too, that you go to the frozen section of the Indian grocery store.
There's so many. There's like ones
freezer.
That are stuffed with like spinach. There's one stuffed with like potato. Yeah, there's all sorts of stuff.
But it reminded me of like a flat croissant almost because it was so flaky.
Yes, it's flaky.
And then, heat it up directly in the cast iron skillet. Like you just literally heat the skillet, just put it right in there and then it starts to brown.
And it's so like buttery, flaky. Yeah. But I don't bake. So I'm always like, what's in this? But it's just
butter.
It's very nice. Is it?
Yeah, I think so.
No, I believe that. But it's very good together because it's sort of like the perfect like vehicle for it because it's not like.
Oh, yeah. And actually, I was just looking at this cookbook from Turkey and the Wolf, which is like a sandwich shop in New Orleans. I don't know if you have gone there, but they use paratha like in one of their sandwiches as like the bread for their sandwich.
Oh,
so
no,
I feel like it's having a moment. So thank
it's
you for leading me
through.
So tell us like in your personal history, like did you grow up eating this dish or what's your relationship?
Yeah,
to it?
I grew up. We didn't eat this as much at home. So I grew up in India and we ate, when I grew up, I was obsessed with Western food. So all I wanted was a croissant and I did not want Indian food. but we would normally, this is pretty normal in India, is like you mainly eat vegetarian food at home and you don't really make like these kind of foods like curry and stuff that we'd have in a restaurant at home. You normally go out to get that. I guess like an American version would be like most people don't like make a nice steak at home. They'll like go to a steakhouse or something, but they'll make like a PB&J or something. I don't know. So
I think you're
it's
right.
Yeah, so we would make like a lot of like that stuff. And so paratha, which is like more rich, we wouldn't eat as often at home. We would just have like a roti, which is just like much healthier. It's like whole grain and very, it has no butter. It's just water and like whole wheat. And it's just like something to sop up the sauce. So Indian food actually growing up to me was like very boring at home. But then when we would go out, we would try this kind of stuff. And so New Delhi is like most of India. There's actually a lot of Muslim population. And I believe keema is more of a Muslim dish or Mughlai dish. So it's like very sort of lamb in general is not something that is like Indian. We get it. We eat it because it's like the Muslim population sort of brought it and made it more mainstream. And some of my favorite Indian restaurants are actually like Muslim like genre restaurants, which are like kebabs and stuff like that, which is like more their food, but we've sort of like adapted it. But this was always like something we had outside. But in India, I believe like lamb in general like was always like a treat. It wasn't something that you have very often because there's no beef. We're not allowed to eat beef because cows are super sacred, so it's illegal to eat beef.
Illegal? Like you would like really get in trouble?
Yeah, no place can serve it. You cannot. There's some like 5-star hotels that have gone special permission from the government to have like a beef dish on there. So this was my other obsession. Was I was obsessed with beef because I was like, what is it?
Why are cows sacred? I should know the answer to this, but like why specifically?
They're just
cows?
Sacred in the Hindu religion. It's like, I wish I knew why, but basically they're so sacred that like you'll see them everywhere. There are murals of cows everywhere you go. Yeah. There's cows behind like most vehicles. There's like a mural of them. You'll see just wild cows on the city streets. Just hanging out.
Okay, yes, and
they are sometimes just eating the trash on the ground. And
so you didn't have a dog growing up, you had a cow?
No, we didn't have a dog, but there was, you know, a lot of neighborhood cows that just
I love it.
And yeah, cows are so sacred that actually if you end up like getting in an accident and hitting a street cow, it's worse than hitting a human being. Like there, no, I'm serious, there will be like a mob of people being like, you have hit the most holy animal. And even now, like there are certain groups in India that if they knew that you like have had beef in your life, it's like no good. Like they'll get very mad.
I'm scared to ask you, like, do you eat beef?
So now I'm a vegetarian mostly. I would say I'm like 90% vegetarian. But I have had a lot of beef in my life when I came out here because I was obsessed with like trying it. And then I was so I ended up having I kind of went hard.
Were you nervous though, like the very first time that you bit into beef, where you're like, I'm gonna get struck by lightning? Like, did you get?
No, interesting, because I grew up in like a very pretty much for the most part shame-based household, and my parents always encouraged like exploring and trying things, and so they were the ones who bought it for me, and they were just like, you should try this, and it was not presented in like a scary way or whatever. And so I really liked it. But I did, because it's one of those things where I wasn't allowed to have it for so long. When I first came here, I felt like I was just blindly eating it without even tasting it, because someone's going to take it away. But yeah, that's why specifically this dish is lamb, and probably in a different culture, it might've been beef, because lamb is very like prevalent because we don't eat beef.
So you said you didn't eat this kind of dish at home, but do you remember eating this at a specific place, like going to a specific restaurant?
I'm trying to remember, not a specific place, but I've definitely eaten something that we definitely ordered and ate, like maybe once every few weeks. And it would be at like more of a Mughlai restaurant, and not like a more traditional Indian restaurant. Yeah, it's not, I can't remember if there's like a specific place, but I don't think so, where I remember like their version of it, but.
And it's interesting, like when I wrote this cookbook like 10 years ago, it was called Secrets of the Best Chefs, and I cooked with all these chefs, and I cooked with this wonderful Southern Indian chef who lives in the South. She lives in Atlanta, named Asha Gomez. And she's from Kerala, and she cooked all this food, but when it was time to serve it, she didn't give us a fork or knife or anything. Like it was like, use your fingers, use your hands. And when I was eating this, I was kind of feeling, it reminded me of that a little bit with the paratha. Is it paratha? Is that how you say that?
Paratha, yeah.
paranta, like scooping that into, there's something very visceral or like sensual, I guess like of like scooping with your hands and like lifting up the meat. But is that true of a lot of the dishes that you grew
that's
up with?
A pretty good question actually. So in South India, which is completely different food, I'm sure whatever she served you looked very different from what she made. South Indian food is very pescatarian also. They barely eat like any like animals. They'll mainly eat fish and mostly vegetarian. And their culture is very different, where it's almost like a different country, but they almost eat everything by hand. And in New Delhi, North India, where I grew up, there is a lot of things you'll eat by hand, but they'll always give you cutlery.
It's a little different.
It's not like a thing. Like you, even I like, so like the big differences, you know, between North and South Indians is, will they eat a rice dish with their hands? Like, which is very common in South India, is you put a bunch of the stuff on the rice in your palm and then eat that. So in North India, we have a spoon. Not eat rice with our hands. Like,
okay, got it.
Like, I didn't. So even for me, that's like taking it a step too far.
Right.
Very messy. It's like people who don't know how to use chopsticks. They're just kind of, it's a flopping everywhere. I'm like, I don't know how to perfectly scoop rice and do the whole thing with my hand. I use a spoon for that. But yeah, it is very common in South India for there to be no cutlery.
So when you grew up, like you said, like all you wanted was to eat Western food, but like, was there a moment in your life when like you went to America and left India that you started to reevaluate your the food you grew up with and started to realize, oh, that was actually pretty special and I should have appreciated it?
Yeah, that's a really good question. Yeah. So my big food journey was I came out here to go to USC to college. And then I was eating the cafeteria food because I was on a meal plan. And I loved it. And now that I'm just like, it was just like hot dogs and burgers like every day. And I literally for
every
year,
day.
Truly every day. I mean, now I don't know what was happening then, but yeah, it was a lot of that. It was a lot of Burger King and Subway and just, I mean, stuff now that I'm like, I wouldn't maybe eat, but I basically burned out on the first year of all of those foods to the point that I believe since college I've been inside a Subway. I can't. Yeah. The smell of it just
smells terrible. And I agree. Like I used to go to Subway and like I would eat it, but now I walk in there, I'm like, I can't even describe that smell. It's like acrid.
Smell, but I'm just like, I can't do it. And like I love Chipotle now, but like other than that, I can't imagine. I don't think I can't do any of those things because I just overdid it so much because I just went from having none of that to like all of it. And then I remember I moved into a little apartment, I think my junior year of college, and had a kitchen. And I truly was like, well, I can't eat this food anymore. And so I bought like a cooking for college students book at the bookstore.
That's hilarious.
And I made like a mushroom casserole dish or something out of cream of mushroom canned soup.
Very American. That's a very American ingredient. That's like every Thanksgiving.
And I just remember I just began cooking with that and made a lot of mistakes. I truly had no idea what I was doing, but it was better. Like the mistakes and whatever it was so much better than any of that other food I was having that it was great. And it was only once I began really like cooking more and more on my own that I began to value like the Indian cooking techniques and the spices. And then if you really look at history, it's like partially why India was invaded in the beginning was for spices.
Yeah, that makes
for
sense.
For tea, for pepper. And there was like the Silk Road, which was like the road that went from India to China to the Europe, where it was all the transported was like saffron and all these spices. And they came to like do that. And it was just like this very bizarre thing of like, oh, this is like a long history of like flavor. Like,
right.
So I definitely began appreciating, like, I would say a few years in. What I really miss more than anything, though, when I first came was I thought there would be like good Indian food in LA, but there really isn't.
Yeah, it's so bizarre because there's so many other cultures that are so well represented here, like Korean food, Chinese food, and Japanese food. Yeah, but
I feel like I discovered Mexican food for the first time in LA because I really didn't. The Mexican food that we have in New Delhi when I was there is TGI Fridays. Like to us, and it's very popular, was when I was there, and we would go all the time. So it's Tex-Mex, which I didn't know what that was at the time, but that's what I thought all Mexican food was, like chimichangas and like when I came here I was like, oh my god. And I feel like that was sort of more of my journey in LA, but I remember realizing like that there is like none and really missing it. And then every time I went back I would only eat Indian food like every meal when I went back, because it really is like so much better
What
there.
about like your family's specific recipes? Like, did you call home and say, like, hey, how do you make that thing that I love?
No, that's like a really good question. So I didn't really begin. When I began cooking, maybe it was this college book, whatever, but I was thinking from a very practical college student point of view, which is, and it's really stuck with me now, which is I need to make something that I can use up a few times.
Right.
I don't want to cook each meal from scratch. And so the big thing that I was would always cook was Italian food, because I was like, oh, you can just reheat this pasta and like it'll taste good no matter what.
Yeah, of
And I was
course. I
cooking
do
a
that
lot of
too.
like, yeah, that kind of stuff. And then I felt like I began cooking more like Mexican and like Asian stuff, like Southeast Asian stuff versus Indian stuff. I was always very intimidated by like how to make that. And then it really, really wasn't until I began in 2020 cooking this book that I really like, I had heard of these things. Like I'd heard of like ginger garlic paste, but I'm like, do I buy that? Do I make it? Like, how do I make? And then I literally bought a pestle and mortar and I was like making amazing. But I always sort of like, because also the grocery stores, like just a regular grocery store, is a big like Asian section that barely has any Indian stuff.
Right, that's
It's like
true.
so small. And then they have a big Mexican section, they have all this stuff. And so just going to a regular store, I was like, oh yeah, this is like what they want us to make. It's like all the stuff that's available.
Well, I went to India Sweets and Spices, which
Yes, how
is
was your
it
experience?
was great. I mean, but it's so funny. I was so happy that I had like this recipe to shop for because it's overwhelming. Like, there's so much
Yes.
stuff there. But I bought just for fun, I bought tamarind paste.
Yes,
And
I've used
last
that.
night I told Craig like I wanted him to make a tamarind-based cocktail. So I looked one up and
Ooh.
I made he made a like a whiskey sour with tamarind in it.
Ooh,
It
wow.
was really good. So you like add hot water to the tamarind paste and then
To
you
rehydrate it or something.
yeah, and then you kind of shake it with whiskey and lime juice and simple
Wow.
syrup, and it was really good. But like, it's so funny to like go there because I feel like it's like a treasure trove of like amazing things, but I don't
Yes.
know what to get specifically and like where to start. So, I mean, did you feel, I guess you had some more frame of reference when you go there, like even like their like section of like packaged foods, like sort of
Yes.
like chips and things. It's like I kind of wanted to buy some of that stuff, but I didn't even know what was good, what
That's
wasn't.
all the stuff I grew up with, all those snacks. Like I know that all that stuff I know so well. Like
Like
I
what? Like what's a snack I can go get there that would be
well, a lot
good?
of Indian snacks are like fried chickpea flour. So it's called besan, and it's like different versions of fried chickpea flour. And
Sounds
so it's like,
healthy.
if I think the fried part is not right.
Yeah, but
Maybe
the chickpea is protein. Chickpeas is
yes,
like
it's at least
falafel.
something. Yeah, it's something. Yeah. So it's a lot of like basically what would be like an Indian trail mix. So it's very salty, very savory stuff. And then often you'll mix it with like dried fruit. And sometimes they come like mixed up. And I love that combo together. It's
Dried
like,
fruit, you say?
like
Oh, wow.
raisins and stuff. So you have like a sweet and salty
I
bite
love
at the same
that.
time. But it's basically different versions of this fried dough. Like they can be circular, they can be like little sticks. And it's like an example, I guess, of would be like a non-potato chip is like a Cheeto. You know how it's a different shape? It's like cylindrical. So there's different versions of that, like just different shapes. And often you make them in like a big platter and they're like just in the middle of a table, like at a get together, and you just like grab some and like snack on them. And so that's a big part. The other big part is I grew up with a huge sweet tooth. So there's a lot of the Indian biscuits that are there. And we love cookies and biscuits. We love, 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 because that comes from the British. So it stayed with us. And there's a specific Indian tea biscuit, which is called Parle G, and it's had the same logo and everything since I was a kid. And it's like a little Indian kid, like just like licking his lips or whatever on the cover. And there's like hundreds and thousands. You definitely walk by it. And you dip it in the tea
Oh, I
and
love
then
that.
get it soggy and then have it like soggy, and then some of the biscuit like crumbles up in the bottom of the tea, so like it sweetens the tea also. And that was like a big thing. But yeah, Parle G biscuits are a big thing, but they have like all the cookies and everything I grew up with there.
Well, that's so interesting, the British aspect of the culture that you're talking about, because it's like this book is like a restaurant in London, but I'm sure
Yes.
that Indian culture has such a complicated relationship with British
Yes.
culture.
Oh
So
my
it's
gosh.
fascinating that like dunking your biscuit in a tea just sounds like a very British thing to do. Like
Yeah,
the
but we
Queen of
love
England
it.
is doing.
Yeah, the things that have like stayed on. And then obviously my partner says it all the time, but he was like, the irony that the British came to invade India back in the day in 1947, not that long ago, not even 100 years ago, like we got our freedom. But like they came and they invaded, and then the Indians just came back there, and now curry is like the national dish of England.
Yeah, I know. Isn't
So
that
insane. Like, who
strange?
would have ever thought in the scheme of things that like it just kind of went all the way back to them in a weird way? But they're so I just did a project in London last year, and it's like they're obsessed with Indian food. There's so many like people, like it's so mainstream. The way I would say Mexican food is in LA, Indian food is in London, at least it felt to me. Like there's like a restaurant everywhere you look, and they're like Michelin star Indian restaurants and like all of this stuff, which is so cool. But yeah,
Yeah.
it's we have like a heavy British influence in India still, like really, really heavy.
I feel like in New York there's this restaurant called Dimaka that just opened up, and I went there, and I don't know which part of India it's from, but like that's a hot, like that's like all the food critics are like all
Really?
going there.
Yeah,
And when
New
I
York
went,
has really good ones, like
yeah,
really
but
good.
that one had goat testicles, which
Oh,
I'd never had before.
I
And
have never
Craig
had that.
refused to, I think Craig maybe tried it. I don't know if he tried, but like they
Sure.
had a biryani, is it biryani? Is that how you say that? They had one. I mean, I was about to ask you about heat level because
Yes.
one mistake I might have made with this recipe is the green chilies that I bought. I don't think I bought the right ones because I
Were
bought
they
like
too spicy or not spicy enough?
not spicy at all. I bought like long green ones, and I wasn't sure if that's what the recipe called
You got to
for.
buy the really small ones. They actually come in packs of 30. That's the
I
problem.
saw
They're
them
like,
there, yeah.
yeah. And you kind of are like, how am I going to use this? And just use one, because it's, unless you like, I mean, I can't do more than one, but yeah, it's the really small ones. Like,
I
they
didn't
look like
realize
little
that. I should
things.
have texted you. Okay.
Yeah,
But
I don't know what the
this
long one is. Yeah, I
the
don't
long
know.
one was probably just a green pepper.
Sure.
I don't think it was a chili. But
Sure,
anyway,
sure,
this
sure.
place, Dimaka, this biryani was truly the spiciest thing I've ever eaten in my entire life, where
Wow.
like waves of sweat like were washing on me, but I loved it.
You
It was like
did.
sadomasochism. Like,
Yeah.
but in terms of like heat level and spice, in terms of like geography, usually like in the world, the closer you are to the equator, the
Yes.
spicier the food. So I would imagine the food in New Delhi would not be as spicy as the food in more southern India. Is that true?
Yeah, that's maybe true. I never thought of it that way, but yeah, it's so small, the difference actually between North and South, because we're not that big of a country, that we are pretty close to the equator still. But I would say it's pretty equally spicy. The people really like spicy food. My parents actually, they, and this is very normal, but those little green chilies that you didn't buy, they eat them raw in between bites. So there's like a plate of them on the table, and in between the food that's already spiced, you just have like a little, as a palate cleanser.
Oh my
And
God.
I have this most vivid memory, because my dad used to work for John Deere, an American company, and he would have people visit all the time, our house. And this one guy visited from Colorado, and he was just fascinated with my mom and dad like doing that. And so I was like maybe 12 years old or something, but I remember it very vividly. He was like, I want to do that. And my parents kept being like, no, like you don't need to. And he was already sweating from the food as is. And then he had one bite, and we had to take him to the hospital. I mean, it was really
You
bad.
really took him to the hospital?
Yes, he was like choking up, and like he was like, I mean, it was really bad. And they pumped his
Wow.
stomach, I believe. Like
Wait,
it
they
was.
pumped his stomach from one bite of a green
Yeah, I
chili?
mean, he had a crazy reaction. Like I think part of it was that he was completely panicking. Like I think he didn't give in to the experience.
Love that. That's hilarious. I
Yeah,
feel like
it
you
was
have to write
really.
that into like a screenplay someday, like
I
that
know. I feel like
scene.
I have to. Now that Hot Ones exists, I'm like, well, people see this all the time. But
Oh yeah, they love
yeah.
that.
Would you ever go to that show? Do you know that show?
Yeah, I mean, if I was famous enough to go on that show, I would go
Yeah.
on that show. I don't think that will happen anytime soon. I love seeing how people react to the with different celebrities like just sort of playing it cool, like, eh, this isn't so
It's a
spicy. It's
genius idea.
yeah, it
That's
is.
why I'm always riveted, because if you watch it enough, you're like, I know which one's coming next. And you're like,
Yes.
just you wait. This is it.
So I'm curious, when you started cooking from this cookbook, like, were there recipes that you were intimidated to make that you then
Yes.
tackled and then learned a lot from?
There was one I was really intimidated to make, and I failed, and then I haven't gone back because it was
Which
so
one was
much
that?
more. It's the dal. I don't know what it's called in this. It's basically the black dal, and
Okay.
it's technically supposed to take 10 hours.
Really?
And it is one of my favorite Indian foods. It's called dal makhni, but it's basically black lentils in butter.
Yeah, I see it. Page 214. If you guys want to read
Yes.
along, this is the Dishoom cookbook.
And it's notorious in general to
this
yes.
one?
Oh my god. Yes,
But
yes,
it
yes,
doesn't
yes, yes.
look very complicated. It has very few ingredients.
Yes, it's just like a it's just one of those that takes like all day to cook and you can't leave it for too long and you constantly have to like check on it. And I got lazy, I think, and lost patience. This was all like peak COVID, and I was like, I have the time, I'm gonna make this. And it was not good. And it's one of my favorite Indian foods. And I think I was like going into it very intimidated, and then I was like, well, this was just too hard. But I don't know if I would ever make that again.
Wait, but I think we need to do some therapy. My original podcast was called Lunch Therapy, and that's how I gave people therapy about it. Because, like, let's talk through this house black doll. Put the doll into a bowl, cover with water, whisk for 10 seconds, let it settle, pour out the water, repeat 3 to 4 times. That's not a hard step.
Sure, that's not hard.
Tip the doll into a large saucepan and pour in at least 4 liters cold water. Bring it to a boil and cook steadily for 2 to 3 hours. Okay.
That's where it begins to, you know, 2 to 3 is a big window.
Yes. Skim off any impurities that rise to the surface and add more boiling water as required to keep the greens well covered. The dal greens need to become completely soft with the skins coming away from the white grain. When pressed, the white part should be creamy rather than crumbly. So is that the step that you screwed up?
Yes, the removing the stuff, I just lost patience. And I was like, I think it's enough. And then I think I kept being like, it looks like it's cooking correctly. And then it did not.
Oh my God. I kind of want to try to make this now to see if I can pull it off. I'm curious.
Delicious. It's truly, oh my God, it's delicious.
Now, how would you describe dal? Because I've had it, obviously, like I've had dal, but like it's like sort of, is it lentils? Is that what dal
is? So dal is basically lentil, and then it can be made in like all kinds of ways. And it goes from like watery to creamy. And this is the creamiest. So it's usually, it's called house dal for them, but that color, when it's brown, you know it's made with butter. And it's, I prefer the creamy. I almost will never want to eat the watery version. And actually the watery one is more South Indian anyways. Mm-hmm. But basically it's just, lentils cooked over like a long period of time where they become like very soft. Like you don't even notice that you're eating. They're like indistinguishable. And often in the recipe, you then at the end of the cooking are mashing them against the side of the pot and they just release into the thing. And it's just, it's almost like just all gravy. There's nothing else really in it. It's so hard to even describe. It is the most incredible flavor. And then I went down a deep rabbit hole on YouTube cooking shows, and I found like this Indian chef who just makes the most insanely amazing Indian food in New Delhi. And he made dal, and this is very common. They take a piece of charcoal or something, and there's like a little metal holder. And at the end of the cooking, you put it in the vessel, the pot, and then light it. So it's like smokes up with the charcoal flavor, and then put a lid on it. So it infuses.
Really?
And it's supposed to create the environment of a tandoor, which is the Indian oven. Have you ever seen that?
I have. Yeah.
It's like the circular black one. And then you stick the food to the sides. And so it gives like the naan and everything, the char, or anytime they cook a kebab or something, but it gives that smell, I guess, what would be Indian barbecue, the smoke of the charcoal that you can't really get, but it's like I can taste it as I describe
it. Yeah, it sounds really good.
But again, I wouldn't recommend it in any restaurant here because it'll just be like a mediocre version of it, I feel.
Yeah. I've heard that Orange County has good Indian restaurants.
Yeah, I believe that.
Poonam was on my podcast, and I think
she was.
About, yeah. Long ago.
Are you following her food journey?
Yes, I'm so jealous. This is Poonam Patel. For those who are listening, she's an incredible actor, and she loves to travel the world and eat. Yes. And I wish I could join her. So in terms of dishes that you cooked from this book that have become part of your repertoire, like what are the ones that you still make?
So the keema is definitely one. I loved a lot of the breakfast dishes. A lot of the egg dishes. They're like very easy and a good way when you buy like some of the bulk ingredients to use up some of them on a daily basis without like that you might not use in a full recipe. So one that was really good, I believe it's called akuri.
Okay.
It's like an egg toast basically. And it's just like Indian version of scrambled eggs with like green chili, like red onion, cilantro, all of that stuff. And then often in India you have all egg dishes with ketchup. Really? And then there's a special Indian ketchup that you can buy at India Sweets and Spices called Maggi. And it's like, you put it on everything.
Okay. That's a funny name. Okay. It sounds like a drag queen or something.
Yes, exactly. And it's basically ketchup with spices in it. So it's like sweet and savory.
Oh,
ketchup.
I like that. That would be really good.
American pure sugar ketchup.
I bet it's better than American ketchup, like more dynamic.
You know, as someone who didn't grow up with American ketchup, I'm like, I love this stuff.
That's so funny.
Yeah. But either way, like you usually will squirt like the ketchup on it, and it's eggs plus ketchup. I don't know if you've ever had it. It's
I was a kid. I'm going to tell you now that you've been vindicated as I flip through this book, because I found the recipe that you sent me first, Keema Per Idu.
You did.
Is the one and that's the one with the ground chicken, but it says keema in italics in parentheses, and it says spiced lamb mints. So that's the definition of keema means spiced lamb mints. So there you are. It is lamb. So Karin, I was going to ask you, let's pull away from this book for a second, because I feel like we're doing like an infomercial for the Dishoom cookbook. And I was going to ask you, like, in terms of your day-to-day life, I mean, for those who are listening, Karin's an incredible actor. He's on Miracle Workers. I just started watching, which is so funny.
Yes,
it was so good.
Yeah.
And Deadpool. So in terms of like being an actor in LA and that kind of, you know, body obsessed culture that we live in and all that kind of stuff, how do you strike a balance between being on screen and wanting to look good, I guess, and eating what you want to?
Well, you know, it's more for me like a question that's changed from my 20s to my 30s. I will say I'm 34 now. In my 20s, I truly didn't think about this once. And for people that don't know, but like sets have really bad food for you. Like it's all the extremes of everything, and it's free and it's in your face every second. And I ate all of it and I never thought about it twice. And actually, it was when I was beginning to do the first season of Miracle Workers, which is now like 5 years ago in 2017, that I went for the costume fitting, and the costume designer on that, she made me 25 custom suits. And she was obsessed with this idea that my character doesn't wear belts. And so they were like measured to fit exactly whatever size I was then. And I remember like, there's nothing like putting on clothes and you're like, there's not a inch to wiggle, and I'm like, and we shot it in Atlanta, and if for people who haven't been, it's some of the best food in Atlanta.
Yes, I lived there for 7 years. I went to college there.
You did? What college?
Emory, and then I went to Emory Law School, which was its own
experience.
My gosh. So I loved
it. Was
the
food good back then too?
Yes,
now
it was
like
incredible.
A big food city. Like,
yeah, I loved it.
Fancy. Yeah, it's so good, and you can kind of get away from you really fast. And that was the first I remember like being like, I gotta like maybe not eat everything that's said.
Yes.
But I've always enjoyed, so I grew up a little bit heavier too in India. I don't know if you know this, but I went to boarding school to lose weight when I was.
No, I didn't know that. That's a surprise.
Yeah. So I basically grew up not playing any sports, and I ate a lot of just rich foods, and I had a very strong, still do, sweet tooth. And it was so bad at one point when I was growing up that cereal in the morning, like the pure sugar cereal, was no longer sweet enough for me. So my mom would melt vanilla ice cream, and I would eat the cereal in melted vanilla ice cream.
Oh my God. Because I've heard Craig's dad sometimes eats his with cream, like just pouring cream into his No, but the ice cream is
even
more.
And that's my mom is like very sweet and loving, and she has a sweet tooth too. So she would sort of be like, I get it. You want to eat? I would eat an ice cream sundae a day. There's a very famous ice cream place in India called Narula's, and they basically make the sundae called a hot chocolate fudge. And it's 3 scoops of vanilla ice cream with like fudge sauce, nuts. It's basically like an American sundae without like a brownie or anything. It's just like chocolate sauce and ice cream. I would have them every day after school. That's after I had the cereal breakfast.
Now, were your parents like struggling with their weight too? I mean, was this something that like was in your family?
No,
or
it wasn't like really there. They have more of that battle now because they don't like doing as much physical activity. So it's just caught up with them a little bit. But like my mom just had like a really strong sweet tooth too. I think I got it from her. So she was sort of like, sure, you want this? Like eat it, have it. Mm-hmm. And I always looked cute, like I had a baby face, and all my weight went straight to my belly. So I had like a little like beer belly, but everything else was fine. But I remember having this distinct memory where I was like, I haven't seen my feet in years. Like I remember just looking down and because it all went into this like the kind of like dad belly or something. And it was hard. My belly was hard. I also remember that. I remember being like, should it be this hard? Shouldn't it be like
It makes me think of
soft?
that Weird Al song, I'm Fat, where it's like, I cannot use a phone booth. I cannot see my toes. When I go
Oh
up to the movies, I
my
take up
God.
seven rows. But
My
so,
gosh.
yeah, but I was
So that,
curious. Yeah.
and then, yeah, I had this big epiphany. I was, I think, 12 years old, and it was like about the time when you start looking at people and you're like attracted, or you're starting to look at other people your age and you're like, wait, what am I feeling? What's happening? And I just remember being like, everyone else was like very skinny and like, because they played sports or did some physical activity. I just didn't do anything. And so I joined like the soccer team or whatever, and it was a disaster because like I'm not good with those kind of sports. And I just didn't, I was heavier and I was like struggling and it just wasn't working. And then I was eating double the amount because I was like, well, I'm working. So it was a disaster. So I basically needed a version of an intervention. So my family found this boarding school called Pathways that still exists. I don't know if they are as body focused now, but it was a big draw for me back then. And basically you go there and you stay, you live there, and it was about an hour from where I lived. And so on the weekends you could come home if you wanted, if your family picked you up. But basically they did two things. One, you worked out for 4 hours a day.
4 hours a day.
We woke up at 5 a.m. and then we ran for 1 hour and 15 minutes around the campus, which was 40 acres. And then ran, run, walk, run again, stop, run, walk. And then you did like 25 minutes of push-ups and other things in the dirt, like the grass, and then like a boot camp. Then you did yoga, stretching, crunches, all that for another whatever 30 minutes till it was 7 a.m. Then you got like 15 minutes to shower and you're like covered in dirt because you've just worked out in like the wet grass after like running around. And then you went to class and did everything. And then from 2 to 4, you played sports. So it was like Monday's tennis, Tuesday's soccer, Thursday, whatever it was, like, and so swimming. So it's like that was like a different sport, like 4 days a week, and then Friday you could go home. And then the other big thing was they were very strict with the diet. So their whole thing at the time was they fed you the same meal for every meal, and that way
This
you.
truly sounds like my vision of hell. Like if you were like Adam, like right type up like your vision of hell, it'd be like having to exercise 4 hours a day and having to eat the same food every day. That would be my hell.
And it was the same food, and the science behind it, which really worked, was if they were like, you can have as many portions of this as you want, but then it, because it's the same thing, it becomes like numb to you because it tastes like nothing, like mush. So you only eat as much. Like by the time it was the first week and it was Thursday and it was like the eighth time I was having brown rice and boiled vegetables, I was like with like no salt, nothing on
Oh
it.
my
And
God.
I was just like, I don't even want to eat that. It feels like nothing. So I'm like, I'm just eating enough so that I'm not feeling hungry. And then, but they would be like, have as many servings. And then the breakfast was, I think, the same thing. It was like a boiled egg or something like that, but you could have as many as you wanted. And then that was it. And no sweets. And, you know, I had the big sweet tooth. And so in like 6 weeks, I think I lost like 60 pounds. I mean, it was insane. Like I became a stick. And what had happened was they also, this is in 2005, they I didn't we didn't really have cell phones, so there was no phones, but there was like a very big, like bulky little phone thing I had, and they would take it from you in the beginning because what would happen was a lot of the kids were having like nervous breakdowns and just like mental breakdowns because it was so extreme from wherever you're coming from, like to work out that much and to eat that kind of food and not be at home. That a lot of them were like calling their parents crying, and then their parents would melt and then bring them home and pull them out of the school. So the rule was for the first 4 or 5 weeks, you could not call your family and you could not, they could not come see you, even if you were a weekly boarder like I was. Some people were there for like the whole year and they didn't go home. And one, these two students, these American siblings who were Indian, I don't know if they were being punished for something, but their parents dropped them off on a vacation. They were told they were going on a vacation to India, dropped them at this school and left. And they would like every week take the, because they weren't in my class, so we were meeting in the food hall, they would take the tray of food and smash it like on the ground as a protest so that they would have to call their parents so that then they could talk to their parents. and be like, I want to come home. And I felt so bad for them because at least I was like, my house is an hour away. I'm not like in it from another country. Like, it's so crazy.
Yeah. And did you voluntarily chose to go to this
Yes.
place?
So basically, my parents took me on a tour and I fell in love with it because at the time I was, and still I'm a huge Harry Potter fan, and I was
Yeah.
reading the books and stuff.
You
And
know
there
that you
was,
worked with Harry Potter on Miracle
oh,
Workers,
do
right?
I know? Do I
Yeah.
know?
I'm just making sure that
Do
you knew
I know?
that.
Yes,
Yeah.
I had posters of it in my bedroom. And so I was like a huge fan, and I became obsessed with the school had four houses. This is the other really funny part of the story. And they were earth, fire, water, wind. And it was based unofficially on your weight and size because
Okay.
you would be magically put into a house and no one knew why, but it was pretty clear. So earth was the heaviest, then there was water, then fire, then wind. And basically the idea was fire and wind would play sports matches against each other, like soccer or whatever, and earth and water would play against each other. And to make it fair, I guess they were just like,
And which were
well,
you?
I started as a water, so I was definitely not like one of the biggest people there. And then like 3 weeks in, I had lost so much weight that they moved me to fire. And I was like, all my friends are in water, and they're like, no, you're in fire.
Now,
And I
did
was just like
you,
so disoriented and like, what's happening?
if you had had a phone, would you have called your parents to come
Oh
get
my
you?
gosh, yes. I mean, I was miserable. I was
Yeah.
really having a bad time. And then it was just such a shock. But partially, I went on the tour and the school looked really beautiful. It had just been built. And now it's very common, but back then, a lot of Indian schools did not have air conditioning. They just had fans. And the classrooms had 60 plus students. And in the summer and most of the year, it's over 100 degrees. So I just remember walking into the school being like, there's air conditioning. The classes have like 35 students and it looks like Hogwarts. Like to me, I was like, this is, oh, there's houses and like how fun. Like I'm just gonna, and it looked really beautiful. And it was just an hour from home. And I was like, I'll get to go home on the weekends. It seemed great to me. I was like, this seems great. And then it was really shocking, like the ex actual experience. And then week five, I remember my mom came to pick me up on Friday because it was the first time we were allowed to go home after the 1 month initiation where you're not allowed to see your family. And she did not recognize me
Wow.
because I lost so much weight.
Wow. And that, I mean,
She
is that
started crying.
healthy to lose that much weight in
No,
such a
I
short
don't.
period of time?
Maybe I think like at that age, it's probably fine.
Yeah.
There was no medical checks happening. But to me, I'm like, maybe it's fine because I think at that age, you're just so elastic. But she didn't recognize it, and then she started crying because I think I looked to her like emaciated because I was
Yeah.
also like a very chubby baby. So I've always sort of had that always. I think so for her to see me like really was really scary.
It's yeah.
And
It's
then
fascinating, like that like connection between like parenting, like a mother's love, like feeding, and like the physical like
Yes.
manifestation of that love being that like you're well fed. And so like then that I think,
Yes.
but that can also screw you up. So I think it's so
Yes, my
complicated.
mom is one of the best cooks I know, and her food, she can make anything, but it's incredible. And she gives love by feeding you, like
Yes.
it's nonstop. Like,
Guess what?
and
I do that too.
yeah,
I feed
it's
people that I
true. I
love. Yeah,
think
I like to feed.
it's so great. It's such a wonderful thing because, like, yeah, it's yeah, I think it's so amazing. But yeah, there's definitely it's hard when we bump up when I have to be like. She's spent like hours making these like multiple feasts a day. And I'm like, I think I can only have one of these. Like, it's too much. But then
So
it's like, how can I hurt their feelings? But yeah.
did this program ultimately like give you a healthy relationship to food and exercise, or did it mess you up?
Yeah, it definitely gave me the very good question, healthy relationship to exercise. Because I had literally never really done it. And then
Yeah.
actually, since then, I've worked out. I try to like 5 days a week, if not seven. And
Okay.
I've dabbled with different things, and now I have stuff that I really like, actually enjoy doing. And I do. I just did today. And I do. I will try to do it every day. And actually, now if I don't do it, I feel very off. Like on like long days, if I'm like working a lot and I just am too tired, I'll feel very off. The food thing, I didn't have to really as much worry about because when I began working out, it didn't really matter. I could just eat whatever I wanted. And then in my 30s, I really began feeling like maybe I can't do that.
Oh yeah.
And it's
Welcome
been
to
like,
wait till you get to your 40s, because then it's
oh
like
boy, tell
everything
me
goes
all
out the
about it.
window. Yeah, I don't
Yeah.
even
There's just, yeah. Was that recent for you? And then you were just
No,
like,
I'm
well.
43, about to be 44, and I think for me it's about embracing like who I am ultimately. Like I was never able to strike the balance between loving to cook and
Yeah.
wanting to be very fit. Like I could
Yeah,
never
yeah, yeah.
find that balance. And so
Sure.
now my
Has
thing is like
anyone figured that out? I guess
yeah,
Padma Lakshmi, right? Because she looks
Padma. I mean, a
amazing.
lot of like these like Jamie, not I guess not Jamie Oliver, but
No,
like
yeah.
certain like buff chefs on TV are like, how do you look like that? But for me, like, it's like, if I was going to the gym like 5 days a week, which I did for a period, and then I like bake cookies for Craig at night, I'd be like, well, what am I doing? Like, now I'm like eating chocolate chip cookies and I just exercised for an hour. And I don't know. I couldn't. So my new thing is like walking a lot. Like I like walking and trying to like eat like salads and stuff during the week and like trying to be somewhat conscientious, but not to try to become somebody I'm not, I guess is where I'm at.
Sure.
But this isn't about me. This is about you.
Yeah. My big thing now in my 30s is that I don't always have all three meals a day. Yeah. This is my new thing, which always used to be like, I will eat no matter what because I have to have dinner, right? And then sometimes I'm like, am I hungry right now? And if I'm not, I won't. And then some days I'm very hungry, and then some days I'm not as hungry, so I'll skip a meal or something. And I'm a little bit more like intuitive with like actually checking in before it's meal time and being like, do I want to eat? And that's a big thing on set because you just snack all the time. And now I stopped this last season of Miracle Workers. I was like, I will not eat any snacks. And because I was just like, I'm just eating this just because it's there. And I was like, a lot of times I'm actually not hungry. And
I was in a writer's room once and they had those Trader Joe's Reese's Pieces, like peanut butter cuppy thingies, like they're little tiny ones. And I remember vividly being like, I'm just going to eat four today. Like, and I would take four and I would put them like next to my little notebook and be like, okay, now it's time. But then by the time the end of the day rolled around, it was like 4 o'clock and we're still working. I'd be like grabbing fistfuls of it, like more peanut butter, more chocolate, you know. But I was going to ask you before we wrap up, like you mentioned that your mom is an incredible cook. So what are the things that she makes that you love the most?
Oh my God. Her Indian food to me is my favorite. But she can make like sort of anything. Like this last time I visited home in December last month, she made dim sum from scratch. Like,
really?
Like the roll, like the rice paper roll, everything. Yeah, she's like a pro savory cook. She doesn't bake or do any of that.
And is she still in India?
No, they live in Georgia.
Oh, in Georgia. Okay, I missed that part of the story.
They live in Augusta, Georgia. So when I was in college, my dad ended up getting a job here in Georgia. And so they've sort of moved. And in India, this is very common, but most even middle class households have help. So you have usually like a maid and a driver and a cook. And almost no people actually cook the food in their own kitchen. They'll have someone do it. Because a majority of the Indian population is below middle class. And they like work in the cities as the help, essentially. Mm-hmm. And so we always grew up with, eventually at the end, we had two different cooks. And my mom would always sort of tell them, and they would literally like, Kailash was like the last cook we had. My mom would literally bring takeout and he would try it. And she'd be like, make this at home. And then he would like experiment and do all this stuff. And like, so she didn't have to ever step in a kitchen. She did initially before she got married, which is like this very sexist tradition where she has to learn like some dishes a man would like or whatever. And that's like her memory. She learned that. And then I think she cooked a little bit in their first home because they lived in a joint family. So they lived with my dad's brother and his wife and kids and everyone. And so there was like a cook there, but they were still like, you have to make some stuff on your own. And then when we moved into our own place, we had a cook and she never had to do anything. And then she came out here and, you know, she sort of like rediscovered cooking really from the first time. And she's so good at it.
And she takes
a lot of pride in it. Yeah. And so her Indian food, I would say, is the best, but she can make truly pretty much anything.
Like what Indian dishes that she makes do you like the most?
Well, I also I stopped really eating most meat and stuff in 2019 also because of an age thing, because I have really bad cholesterol genetics, which I've discovered, and blood pressure genetics, which is so fun. Because I feel like I live such a healthy lifestyle compared to my parents, but you can only fight it so long. I'm like, no matter what I'm doing, this is still a problem. So I tried as much. So trying to switch to being a vegetarian as much as possible has helped avoid a pill so far. So I've been doing it. But so like her paneer makhni is amazing. Her dal is amazing. She also makes naan from scratch and from scratch. And then every morning when I was there, she made me like on a paranta, like Indian scrambled eggs and then like onions and different things, and you almost wrap it up and it's like a breakfast burrito.
That I actually was thinking, because I had two paranta left this morning and I was gonna like,
have you ever made skillet. A chutney?
Yes, but the chutney I made was from like the Barefoot Contessa, which is probably not that authentic, but it's really good. It's like ginger and apples and raisins and
no. No. You don't want to make, no, that's not, yeah. You got to make the Indian green chutney. It's so easy. You just bake it in a food processor. But it's basically just like cilantro, different things. And it's green and it's, you put mint and it's very like light. And it just, the mix with the savoriness of the other ingredients, it's like so refreshing. It's not meant to be spicy at all, too. And often I'll make a chutney grilled cheese too. So like you can just put it in everything. You just make it and then it's like a use all condiment. It's like an Indian salsa, I guess, or whatever. But you'll probably have a lot of the ingredients for that still left over. And I'm sure
What
there's
is the
a
chutney like that you buy in a jar? Like what? Because like the
the
one in the
chutneys
Barefoot
can
can, yeah, the Barefoot
they can be
Contestant one's like
different.
sweet.
Yeah, they can be different. A chutney is just, I guess, a word for salsa, like which can be like red, green, whatever you want to make mixed. And so, but the green chutney is the most common in Indian food and specifically street food, because the big things that are common in Indian condiments are something that have a cooling energy because there's so many spices. So also the yogurt and the thing you put is yogurt is very common in a lot of things because it just mellows out a little bit. Otherwise, it's too intense. But most chutneys are meant to like cool the palate in the same bite as you're eating something very savory. And a green chutney to me is like just, it's just amazing and so easy.
I'm
Like,
gonna make that. That sounds good.
yeah.
Well, Karin, every episode begins with the dish that you told me to taste to have a you've got to taste this moment. But I'm curious, what was the last thing that you tasted? This is the final question. That was a you've got to taste this moment for you, like a thing that like
Ooh.
you the last best thing that you ate is another way to phrase the question.
That's a really good question. I just had something called mushroom fries.
Really? I've never heard of
Yes,
that.
at Great White. Do you know this LA
No, where's
establishment?
that?
So it's they used to have just one in Venice, but now they have one in Larchmont and one in West Hollywood. And I went 2 nights ago, and it's mainly known for its breakfast, which is like very good, very simple, very well done. Expensive. Well, we know LA prices.
Yeah, of course.
Very good and very good coffee, very good, and very nice aesthetics. But then I went for dinner and they have like this whole other dinner menu. And they have, I ordered a bunch of, the cool thing about being vegetarian or trying to be as much as possible is you just eat a bunch of sides, which I love sides. It's like tapas every night. And so one of them was mushroom fries, and it's basically oyster mushrooms in like a very light tempura batter. And then with like a very, like a harissa mayo. And it was just like very simple, but I was like, I could just pound these down. Like they were so good. And it didn't feel very oily because of the tempura batter. And
I love that.
so it was very good. And I
I'm
just like
gonna go
love the
there. That
sound of
sounds
mushroom fries.
fantastic.
Yeah, go to the one in Larchmont because it's not that far from you.
I will. Well, thank you so much for doing this. I feel very inspired and I feel like we covered a lot of ground. And now I
Yeah,
want to
me
go to the
too.
Indian store across the street and buy a bunch of stuff. So
Yeah,
maybe
buy
I
the
will.
biscuits.
Yes, I will. All
And the
right.
biscuits.
Well, have a great rest of your
Yeah, you
weekend and I'll
too.
see you around.
Alrighty.
All right, that's all for this week's episode of You've Gotta Taste This. If you want to try the recipe again, you can find it at amateurgourmet.com. And be sure to give me a follow on social media at amateurgourmet on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok. And we'll see you back here next week. Have a good one. Okay, thanks for listening to this week's episode of You've Gotta Taste This. If you want the recipe that I made that Felicity sent me for the poppy seed bread, I'm going to include it in my newsletter, which is amateurgourmet.substack.com, and it's free and it comes every Monday. And if you want to see it, all my cooking and everything on Instagram, I'm amateurgourmet on there, as well as Twitter and TikTok. All right, I'll see you back here next week, and let me know if you made this. Tag me in your posts. Bye.